listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our series on day 7 for work, rest, or play with Dr. Bierman today. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can learn more about Concordia University, Wisconsin by visiting cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, professor of theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Dr. Bierman, welcome back.
Good to be here.
All right, we're moving on to Chapter 6 today.
My two favorite things. Sleep and play.
Yes, that's right.
I like sleep and I like to play too. Yeah. So, all right. What is work and what is play?
Yeah, this is a great question. And people are stymied by this. I mentioned weeks ago, I said that when we think about work, it's a lot more complicated than we realize. Mm-hmm. And it really is. Well, one of the big problems is, well, when does play and work, what's the line between them? When does one stop and the other one begin? And it's not always so clear cut. And so the short answer I would offer is that work is purposeful. You're trying to get something done for a reason, whereas play, by definition, is not purposeful. It's just done for its own sake. It has mm-hmm. no other ulterior motive. And I think that's probably one of the clearest definitions. That's the short one. I can give you a paragraph definition of work. And scholars do this kind of stuff, or even a paragraph definition of play. But that to me is kind of the heart of it. And I think that holds up the best is the idea of the purposefulness of work and the purposelessness of play, which sounds like it's diminished, but it's only diminished if you think it has to be productive. Mm. See, that gets back to our total work problem. And if I'm going to judge everything by total work, play is totally a waste of everything. But if you see the world in a leisure sense and in a Sabbath sense, play becomes not just a nice part of life, but I would argue an essential part of life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. How is play different from leisure?
Right. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at here. And why I had this chapter. This is kind of a weird chapter, frankly. I had these two ideas, and I didn't want to make them eat long enough for a whole chapter, and it'd give me 8 chapters. And I didn't want that. And so I just made them one chapter with 2 half thoughts in it. And so so play and sleep kind of come in here. But play is important because it's a way to put this kind of stuff we do that we used to call leisure, but it's not leisure because mm-hmm. I've redefined leisure. Leisure is contemplation, festival, worship, living in tune. That's a whole way of just kind of what it means to be human is to live in a leisure way. So what about goofing around? What about playing a board game with my friends? What about playing pickleball? What about, you know, flying a kite with the grandkids? What's that? Well, I would say there are elements of leisure involved there, no doubt, but it's probably best defined just simply as play. And so play is activity that is done for its own sake, just for the sheer delight of doing it. Mm-hmm. That's what play is all about.
Mm-hmm. It's very good for us too.
It is very good for us. In fact, it's, I would argue, kind of essential for us. Peter Berger, a sociologist from the mid-20th century, wrote a little play on the Rustle of Angels, I think is a little book, I'm saying, it was the title of it. But he argues in there that play gives you a taste of eternity.
Ooh.
Because when you're playing, time stops. Mm-hmm. And there's some truth to this. It's like when you're playing baseball, it doesn't matter if it's 3:05. What matters is it's the bottom of the ninth. That's all that matters. And if you're playing, you know, a football game, it doesn't matter that it's 12:15. What matters is there's 3 minutes left on the clock. You see, and so there's and the rules of the game are different. So in other words, when you play, you kind of step out of ordinary time and into an artificial world for a little while. And it reminds us of the timelessness of things. And it reminds us that there are other ways of operating. So play and games are really important for us as humans because of what they remind us of and for what they teach us about what it means to be human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the playful mind concept actually came up in my capstone project during grad work about how it's good for us to take time to play, and it actually helps other parts, other aspects of our lives when we're able to kind of step outside.
No, absolutely. And there are actually physiological things you can get into and all this kind of stuff in the medical community, but these things are important. And what the argument I'm trying to make here is that instead of seeing play as a diversion that we have to make an excuse for, it is its own thing that it's a very good thing. So when you schedule a game night with friends, that's a really good thing. And mm-hmm. it's a priority. It's not something you should, if it fits in. No, you should be making a priority for this.
Yeah.
And spending time for play, just for the sheer delight of just the game, the enjoyment of being with each other, that's its own reason.
Mm-hmm. It's reason enough for me. So we've kidded before, I think, in this series about that we enjoy our work. And so if we're having fun at work, that it's not actually work. I feel like this is part of our American culture, too. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm having fun at work, so it's not actually work. But that's not actually true, is it?
Well, that's kind of getting back to how we're going to define these things. Work is purposeful. So I work for what I'm trying to get done, whether it's to sell a house or get a paper written. Get a paycheck, you know, build a car. But see, and so that's why work, if you're getting paid for it, compensated in a sense, is purposeful. I'm not doing it for the fun of it. It's for the paycheck. But now, can you love your work? Yeah. And so in a sense, I'm not too concerned about drawing neat, clean lines between work and play. Because is a lot of work feel like play? If it's good work, it can. And that's not bad. And can you cultivate an attitude toward your work that becomes a little bit more of, this is a gift from God, and I can delight in this, and it becomes have as an element of play. You can't. Now, not all work is going to be that way. Cleaning toilets are just cleaning toilets, you know? And digging ditches is digging ditches. It's just, it has to get done. Someone needs to do it, whatever. So there's some work that way. But in the other sense, we can learn to kind of delight in what we do. And most of us, when we start to find the thing we enjoy doing, even if we get paid for it, it's still pleasurable and we find joy in it. But pure play doesn't have an element of reward or compensation or of purposefulness. You're just doing it. In fact, a game night with friends is a great example of this. You know, what did you gain out of that? Well, I networked and I was able to maneuver a better job contract. Well, that can happen, but in a sense, you're ruining play by doing that and you're kind of cheating it. And that's why good play doesn't have purpose. And this, maybe you'll ask about this, but I'll bring it up now because it's on my mind. This is why even worship is rightly understood as play rather than, you know, work. Because what's the purpose of worship? There isn't one besides just worshiping. Well, I'm doing it so that. No. There's no so that. It's just its own thing for itself. Sort of like Thanksgiving meal celebration. What's the purpose? What do you mean, what's the purpose? You're asking the wrong question. It is its own purpose. And we get that kind of intuitively. There's some things that are just their own purpose. And that's when play kicks in. And that's when it's happening, right? It's just its own, for its own purpose.
And I want to come back to worship and work in just a moment.
Yeah, but yeah.
I just have to say that Mary Poppins would disagree about cleaning toilets. Because in every job that must be done, there is an element of fun, right?
Yeah, I guess she does argue for that.
You find the fun and snap. The job's a game.
Yeah.
And see, now it's play.
Well, yeah, you see, that's what I was trying to get at. You can change your attitude to a certain point. And it becomes a game. My mother-in-law used to tell her son, we're going to play a game. It's called Chase the Sweeper. Or Chase the Vacuum Cleaner. And so that's, you know, it's the game. So you turn it all into play. And there's an element. There's some
Every parent's tried it.
Yeah. When you're successful, it makes life better. Yeah.
All right. You started to talk about worship and work. And there's a quote here. We worship our work. We work at our play. And we play at our worship.
Yes, that's an old adage that people try to put, whoever wrote it, we're not sure. As some humorist from the late 19th century started saying it, and it's kind of caught on. And it captures this kind of misordering of everything. So we worship our work. Yeah, that fits that total work mentality. And we worship our play. Yeah, because we want to do what we want to do, the things that we enjoy, and then we just kind of play at our worship. But in a sense, if we get worship right, it should be play, because we shouldn't try to make it into an instrumentalized thing. We're doing it for some other purpose. It is its own justification, is its own reason. And that's what I mean by the playfulness of it. In fact, even the idea of liturgy, you know, I've heard people explain the liturgy is, in a sense, play. You're leading a play. And it's like, is that you kind of trivializing it? No. I think it enhances it because, see, we're doing this for its own sake. And there's simply delight in that, whatever the elements of it are, the motions of it, is its own justification.
That's and it transcends time.
It mm-hmm. does. It jumps out of time. Time doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter that Packers are kicking off at 12:05. We shouldn't care. And the part of the problem is we do care. And that kind of messes things up. It shows how we get things goofed up, even how we think about worship.
When we... the fact that it transcends time. One wise person once told me when he was asked as a pastor, what's the most important part of the service? And he said, the part that's happening right now.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly right. That's good. I've not heard that one, but I like it.
Yeah. I feel a little attacked right now with football analogies.
So anyway.
So why is it so hard for adults to actually just like play, the real play where we don't try to make it work? And so often we're like, we're going to play, but we're going to add a purpose on top of it. So it's a learning experience or some sort of productive thing. Why is that so hard for us to do?
I think it is because, and I think you're bringing it up illustrates the total work mentality we live in, the culture we live in. We judge everything by its productivity, by its efficiency, by what we get done. And if it doesn't accomplish something, it's not worth it. That betrays our total work mentality, and it belies the whole problem. That's why Pieper wrote his book, Leisure, the Basis of Culture, is we have forgotten how important these things are. That's exactly it. That's right. And it's also, you see, we instrumentalize even, I'm playing pickleball for the fun of it. No, you're doing it for exercise.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm doing it to keep my body healthy. You know, there are fringe benefits that are going to come, and, you know, even from playing. You can say, we can't make it all purposeless. Yeah, there's always going to be some benefit, the dopamine rush you get, whatever. I get it. There's always something you're going to kind of get some benefit. But the point is, you're not going into it with this objective of, this is my reason for doing it. If that's your reason, you're messing it up.
But even purposelessness is a purpose in and of itself.
In a sense. That's right. And now we're contemplating here. Now we're taking it apart. And we can take it apart until it all falls apart.
Welcome to today's 3-hour episode.
Yes, that's right.
The coffee hours. We're taking a look at chapter 6 in day 7 for work, rest, or play with Dr. Bierman. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are taking a look at chapter 6 of day 7 for work, rest, or play from Concordia Publishing House with Dr. Joel Bierman. And we've talked about sleep and play.
Yeah.
Does it matter if we categorize everything? Like work, play, sleep?
Yeah, we don't need to get, I'm not too hung up on categories. The point is to think about your life and think about the things in your life and to be able to embrace them a little more openly. I guess that's kind of my motivation in this whole book is, I'm not trying to give you brand new insights into your life you never thought about, but I want to give you maybe more permission to do things you're doing with a little more joy, a little more alacrity, and a little more freedom. That you shouldn't feel guilty about having playtime with your kids. You shouldn't feel guilty about flying a kite. What did I get done? Well, we flew a kite. You know, that's a good thing. So don't get worried about categorizing things so much. Just kind of delight in what God gives you.
Mm-hmm. One of the books I had to read for one of my classes talked about, you know, maximizing your productivity and
I'm sure it did.
And putting things into categories. And if you're not good at something and if you don't enjoy it or if you're not good at something, maybe you need to, you know, consider not doing it anymore. But you say the exact opposite thing in this chapter. I was like, oh, okay. So is it worth doing things if we're not good at them?
Yeah. G.K. Chesterton has this marvelous quote. He has a lot of marvelous quotes. But this one, he said, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And I love that because I don't excel at sports, frankly. It's not my thing. I've been playing pickleball for years with my wife now, and she always kills me in singles. She's got some natural athletic ability. She's good. And her shots go where she wants them to go. Mine never do. And it's frustrating, but it's the way it is. But I take some solace. Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Right.
Yeah, I've shared that quote freely, and people don't like it. They push back hard. No, you should be getting better at things. You need to do it right, you know. But Chesterton's point is, quit worrying over much about becoming an expert. We ruin stuff by trying to become experts in it. And see, we ruin play. Like, even like pickleball, it's pretty simple. You get a hard paddle and just knock a pickle wiffle ball back and forth. Not too complicated. But now you can spend $300 on a stupid paddle. That's a board for crying out loud. Or, and how much can you spend on your shoes and get the right thing? And I see people show up with, you know, multiple paddles and shoes. And it's like, give me a break. You're ruining this. You know, just take it as it comes. And we do this with everything. We overthink it. Back to your overthinking question a few weeks ago. And we ruin stuff by instrumentalizing it and trying to get better at it. And so just take it as it comes and do it the best you can and enjoy it for what it is.
Just thinking of all the activities people do for fun that we...
Everything. I did a Google search because I was curious about this. What about collecting stones? Yeah, there are stone collectors who have rules about how you do it. So you could take anything as simple as picking up sticks. There are people who have stick collections, looking for the right sticks. And so it becomes an obsession. You could take anything.
Fishing.
Well, fishing is a gimme. How many thousands of dollars do people spend on their fishing? Come on. What are you doing here? When does it become an obsession?
Wow, we have just offended so many people.
So many people.
Well, see, you start to ruin it by the amount of time and money and the obsession it becomes. You ruin it. It's not fun anymore. Mm. This is like the Major League Baseball player. He played T-ball. He played Little League. He played in college and it was fun. And then at some point, it stops becoming fun and it's work. And it's been ruined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's why I stopped racing bikes a few years ago. It stopped being fun. And I was like, what am I even doing here if I'm not enjoying it?
Oh, we could spend four episodes talking about youth sports.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
We'll offend even more people.
Oh, man. But this captures it on so many levels. There's so many things wrong with that.
So don't take it personally, anyone.
No.
We're offending everyone today.
Even ourselves.
Equal opportunity to offend.
Yes.
I try.
Whose turn is it?
It's my turn.
I keep interjecting. Okay, let's talk about sleep.
Before we offend more people.
Yes. That's the other half of my chapter. Sleep is so cool. And I read an essay years ago. This just sparked my imagination. I've never thought, forgotten it. And I've always wanted to write more about this and do more work on it. So I finally did it in this book. But sleep is one of those things that is just part of our life. We do it every single day. We have to do it. We love it. A lot of people just love to sleep, you know. But how weird is it when you stop and think about
it? It's so weird.
It is. It is just so weird because, you know, when you're asleep, you're totally helpless. You're kind of reverting back to infantile days. You drool. You don't know what's going on. You're not producing anything. You're totally checked out. You're vulnerable. You're at risk. And yet we do it all the time. And it's just part of how we're wired. I'm convinced that God built us human beings to need sleep for a reason, that he wants us every single day to be reduced back to our complete dependence on things we can't control. We have to live out of control to sleep. And it's there as a daily reminder of our humanness, our creatureliness. It's huge, but we don't even think about it because it's just so much part of our lives. We don't realize how weird it really is.
Mm-hmm. So how does sleep help us? I shouldn't say help. It almost forces us to really contemplate our humanity.
Right. Because when you sleep, you're not in control. And even to get sleep, you're not in control. I say, you can't will sleep. It's not like saying, now I will fall asleep. When you do that, you don't. We all know this, that when you really need to fall asleep fast, you don't. And when you're really tired, you know, you're coming off the road, you just want to get to sleep right away, you can't because you're still wired, you know, and I want to sleep because I have to get up early. It doesn't work. And even though, you know, I'm going to have all my routine, sleep has to come as a gift. You don't choose it. Finds you. I think it was E.B. White that, you know, in Charlotte's Web, that sleep finally and Wilbur found each other, you know, and kind of, you know, finally settled down. It has to come to you. It's a gift. And so as creatures, we are dependent on this thing that we have to have. We're out of control when it happens, but we can't live without it. And it's just this weird conundrum that is just so much part of life that forces us to recognize our utterly creatureliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I don't have to get up early, I get so excited about sleeping in and then I can't fall asleep. So I'm just so excited that I don't have to set an alarm. It's really brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does sleep force us or require us to have faith, to think about what faith is?
There's a tribe in the Amazon who has a little saying, don't sleep, there are snakes. And a reminder, you know, when you're asleep, you're vulnerable. You're at risk. Someone else has to be looking out for you. That's why we put deadbolts on our doors, and you know, we try to be safe. But you're vulnerable, and so sleep is a reminder of that. That you aren't in control. You can't even control your own body to make it do what it wants to do. It's gonna sleep. It has to. If you go without sleep for 3 or 4 days, you're done.
Yeah,
you've got to sleep, and so your body forces you to admit. You're not in control. You're not your own lord. You're not your own master. You have to sleep.
So what does it teach us about who God is, the nature of God?
Yeah, the nature of God is the one who cares for us and provides for us and looks out for us. So every day I return back to my infantile state where I become completely dependent, unaware. My mind just kind of shuts off and does these weird dreams that are just totally nonsense. And why? It reminds us that God gives us what we need. He's going to provide for us, and I don't have to make it happen. He brings it to me. He lets it happen. He gives me what I need. What's also interesting about sleep is, you know, it's so much part of our lives, but even to explain it, you know, why do we sleep? You know, they've done all kinds of studies, and they know we need it, and they speculate about, well, maybe the brain needs to recharge itself, but Why has God made us this way? And I really do, like I said, I believe it's just because God wants us to remember that we are dependent creatures who need to be able to admit our lack of control every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a few lessons on sleep. And in my neuroscience class, we learned about some of the things that the brain does when we sleep. And it's fascinating what happens. But even there, there's no like, this is why this was created this way. It's just that this is how it is.
They know why. They know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they know things that are happening, but to explain why. I pointed out in the book, I mentioned that, you know, the fact that we as these human beings have not been able to evolve our way out of sleep is kind of telling. Because if we really are Darwinian products of evolution, why do we still need to sleep? Some animals don't, but we do.
Yeah.
We do. And you would think that we would master this and somehow get out of our need for sleep. We can't. It's the way that God has made our human bodies.
It's just wild, and I love it. Yeah. There's a theological connection, too, between sleep and death. It shows up all over our hymnody. What is this connection that happens so often between sleep and death?
Well, yeah, sleep kind of looks like death. You're out of it. You're not aware. You're totally dependent. That's how death is. And the language that gets used in the Bible is even Jesus. She's not dead. She's asleep. Well, she's not, you know, sleep. What do you mean? Well, that's the whole idea. So we fall asleep in Christ and we are sleeping in the Lord. And so sleep is that sense of complete dependence and being out of life for a while. Well, that's what death is. And so sleep is a precursor in a sense for death. And even some of our hymnody picks up on this, as you mentioned, you know, that we have these little types of mortality. We get undressed like a corpse does, and we crawl into our tomb, and we check out of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning, we're resurrected to a new day. And on the last day, we'll be resurrected to a new life. There's a beautiful connection there. So your daily routine of sleep should remind you of your daily mortality and of God's promise of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Anything else on sleep and play as we wrap up our time together today?
Key parts of what it means to be human, or key parts of what it means to live as a human rightly in tune with the Creator and with the rest of creation. So we need to recognize sleep as a gift from God and play as a gift from God, and not just kind of like add-ons that, throw that into your life. But there are critical parts of this full human life, living in a Sabbath way, is living in tune with God, sleeping, resting daily, and then playing and delighting in what God gives us.
They're things we need. They're also things that we're given.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They're gifts. Part of that receptive life. That's right.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House and professor of theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Always a delight.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Goldheath.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.